we go. Welcome to episode five? Four.
Five.
Five. Sweet.
Yes.
Sweet. Episode five of the STR Gamer Podcast.
What's the five anniversary? Is there one?
Fifth anniversary, like of a wedding?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's...
The wood anniversary?
Probably. It's something like that, or it's like tin.
Huh.
You know, it's like tin. Here, honey, have a tin thing. Anyway. Good job derailing us right off the bat. Yeah, welcome to the fifth episode of ASTR Gamer Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Sam.
Great. And we're here to talk about some geeky ass shit.
Dude, it's going to be awesome.
Oh my God. So much geeky ass shit.
We should mention, awesomely, in the show notes, that we're on iTunes now.
That's right.
Yeah.
We should mention that in the show notes, which don't exist.
Yes.
Yes, we are on iTunes. You can find us at
Just search for the STR Gamer Podcast.
Yeah, search for STR Gamer, because surprisingly, if you search for Codcast, you get other things.
Yeah.
Because that's how I tried to find it the first time, and it was like, here's the Codcast, which is a podcast about, unsurprisingly, fishing.
Yeah, or Call of Duty.
Oh, and
we
really?
Are not a Call of Duty exclusive.
Oh, yeah, definitely not a Call of Duty.
Not COD, like...
What do those guys find to talk about for however long?
I don't know, like...
Oh, dude, I totally did this sick-ass knife kill! Without video, it's kind of fucking pointless.
Man, I was on Xbox Live, and I was making all kind of racist jokes. It was crazy.
Now, let's not stereotype the idiotic bros on Xbox Live.
Yeah, to be fair, you and I were just trying to get on Xbox
Exactly,
Live,
and it was like, no, for your own good, I'm not going to let you on. Can you imagine that?
Well, the only game I've actually ever played over Xbox Live is Project Gotham Racing 3, when I first got
Xbox. And you had a good experience with that.
I got destroyed.
Well, yeah, because you suck, but...
Yeah, but the people were nice, but I was like 20 in 26th place or something like that, and it was brutal. But no, people were nice. I mean, I don't generally play games over Xbox Live, except for with you, to kick your ass. But
sure. Beat me to it, damn you.
But I do want to play Assassin's Creed Brotherhood over there.
Ass Creed, bro.
Yeah, it seems like that kind of game is requires a large party. You know,
it does.
To really make it happen.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle the party chat and things like that.
Yeah,
could be add a lot of suspense to that game if you're crawling around trying to make yourself look like an NPC and somebody's like, "I'm right behind you," and you're like, "Ah!"
It'd be very creepy, but very cool. But yeah, so we're on iTunes, the link is on is embedded in the blog, so you can always
strgamer.blogspot.com.
Yep, and we also have an email address. So
that's right.
If you want to send us questions or just want to
flame us,
pretty much that's strgamercodcast@gmail.com.
All right.
Someday
Gmail is going to run out of email addresses.
Yeah, today's not that day.
Today's not that day, but
so. So, what have you been geeking out about this week?
I've been geeking out a lot of shit. So, I played a little bit of Dragon Age. Did I talk about giving myself a million gold last time?
Yes.
Okay.
And we all laughed at you.
Yeah. So, did that. But then Tuesday, L.A. Noire came out, as well as The Witcher 2. But I bought L.A. Noire and have been playing that. And that game is pretty damn rad. A Team Bondi release, published by Rockstar. It feels like the next iteration of the Rockstar formula,
mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing.
We're going to talk more about that, I think, later on. But what are your initial impressions of the game?
It's good. It's good. I have some issues because it is a very different kind of game. I mean, people have described it as an adventure game in 3D, and that's very much what it is.
Mm.
It's much more deliberate than some people might be expecting and or want. There's something else I was geeking out about. I've continued to play Dungeon Raid and Army of Darkness Defense. I beat Army of Darkness Defense,
Wow.
Which was surprisingly hard, and now I have unlocked Endless Mode, which is stupid. So I'm done playing Army of Darkness Defense now.
Fair enough.
Aside from that, I don't know what the hell else I've been doing.
Well, L.A. Noire is a big deal.
L.A. Noire, I've plugged probably 20 hours in L.A. Noire already, so that's probably what I've spent most of my time doing.
Nice.
How about you?
Well, I ended up spending some money on Dungeons and Dragons Online.
Oh, really? Nice. Yeah.
The freemium content, as it were.
They got you, bitch.
Oh, man, they totally got me. It's just like, I was seriously, because they had a sale for, you know, a week or something.
Right, because that's
off.
What they do.
That's what they do. 20% off the content packs. And the way that you buy them, I mean, of course, you know this, is you buy them in quest adventure packs. And so I basically sat, you know, I would just have the window open and, like, look at the Looking for Group tool in Dungeons & Dragons Online to see what people are playing over time and, like, cross-referencing them with, like, reviews about the different adventure packs. And I had, like, $50 worth of stuff sitting in my in my cart, my shopping cart. And ended up, you know, paring it down to, like, $30. And picked up some really cool adventures. And so I've been running different adventures, like, of the content of the stuff that was on sale, and actually really, really liking it, like remembering why that game is awesome and not having the problems that we had before they went free to play, which was, you know, that game is really built for parties, especially if you're like a rogue class or a mage class or something. And haven't been having really that much trouble finding a party for some of this stuff because it's pretty popular content, and plus with all the new people in there and the server merges and stuff, it's pretty easy to find a group. And also, like, it's kind of a different experience I'm finding, like, rather than a general MMO, you know, like Lord of the Rings Online or WoW or any of those games where you're, like, constantly doing stuff, I find myself, you know, going in there, opening up the group window, seeing what people are doing, and then just reading. Just, like, you know, alt-tabbing and reading something or reading a book or whatever and waiting for a party to fill up. And then, you know, I'll go and do an adventure and then, like, come back and kind of de-stress or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a very different experience. Also jumped into stuff like Lotro and Rift just to kind of see what was going on. But
did you pay for a month of Rift?
Well, when we first subscribed, they had Founders pricing.
Right.
So I subscribed for 3 months from the get-go.
Nice.
Just to get a cheaper deal on it. So I haven't played much of that this week, but I did see that Age of Conan has this special right now that they're allowing, you know, previous players to come in. And I've been kind of fiending for that game, so I probably installed it, you know, let it run overnight and jumped in, and I was just like, I don't know what's going on.
What the hell is going on, yeah.
So, but it's free for the month of May, which is pretty cool. I finished the Mortal Kombat story mode.
Oh, you finished it?
Yeah.
Really? You beat Shao Kahn?
Yeah.
Is that fight as much of a bitch as I heard it was?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is, but at that point, I mean, spoilers, but at that point, you're playing as Raiden.
Sure.
And his teleport is unbeatable. I mean, it... That's why
you were so good with him earlier today.
I kept spamming the teleport and, like, doing the torpedo move and stuff. There was a couple points where I, like, had to put the controller down because I was so frustrated with how cheap that game can be.
Yeah.
And I feel like, well, yes, it's, like, a harkening back to the way that Mortal Kombat has always been, but that's always been unnecessary, you know? So I don't know what else to say about that, you know? Yeah. But it's very satisfying. Like, I think it's a cool story mode, you know. And that, now I've been sort of plinking away at the challenge tower, trying to rack up, you know, combo or whatever combo points they call it, or
yeah, combo points with a K.
Yeah, to unlock stuff like costumes and stuff. So
nice.
So yeah. Also been playing through some more Bulletstorm and I'm really excited about Witcher 2.
That's right.
At least as excited as I am about L.A. Noire. And I was thinking, I'm not too sure how my computer will run The Witcher 2, although I put a bunch of upgrades in it. But and also, like, I wouldn't mind waiting till the price comes down a little bit, or if there's a sale or something on Steam. So,
which, you know, there will be.
There will be.
Yeah.
So I've been going back into The Witcher, the original one, and... just, like, kind of putzing around, figuring out, like, where I am so that I can, like, you know, keep going with the story and with the game. And, like, I even had to go back to Wikipedia because there's, like, so much and just, like, read up. And I thought I was just, like one act in or something, but I'm actually pretty deep into the game.
Oh, wow.
So it's, I don't know, kind of considering, like, kind of having an itch to actually complete that game before playing The Witcher 2, although I'm sure I could just pick up The Witcher 2.
Yeah, but you got, I mean, if you're waiting for a deal or something, you might as well play The Witcher 1.
Yeah, it's got me fiending for
it. It's got its hooks in you.
Yeah, and actually I was talking to one of my friends who's Polish, and talking to him about The Witcher and the, because, you know, it's based on this Polish fiction and all this stuff, and talking about the author and stuff. Pretty rad stuff. So, other than that, you know, just geeking out in general.
All right. Good. Like you do.
You should note that we had an epic rock band party at your house
last
night.
That's right. Yeah. Last night, epic rock band from 7:30 until 2 a.m. And lots of fun was had.
Yeah.
That game remains cool.
And now we're doing a podcast, not either of us not having our good voices.
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about L.A. Noire, and specifically the motion scan technology, which they is new to L.A. Noire. There hasn't been anything like this. And it's basically very sophisticated facial mapping. And they take the actor's performance in this, and they map it on, and they put it on a animated character, and it looks it's unbelievable.
Really?
And the join, there's still a disconnect because the face is fabulous and the rest of the body is sort of video gamey. But for the purpose of the game, L.A. Noire is a detective game set in the 1940s and 50s L.A. And you have to interview suspects and decide if they're telling the truth, whether they're lying, or if you doubt them. And you do that strictly based on their facial animations. So it's important for this game that you have that fidelity. But it raises an interesting question, because people have been just gobsmacked by how good this is. And I'm sure people are going to try and shoehorn it into other games. But I think it works real well for L.A. Noire. I'm not sure how much we need it for other things. I mean, the Uncanny Valley that exists, where people, they just can't quite get facial, humans to look right. There's always something, the closer they get to making it look perfect, the more something bothers people when they're looking at it. And this is a big step towards overcoming the Uncanny Valley, but, we've always been able to separate the video game characters from real life, because it's sort of like, oh, well, they're not real. But this is maybe, in some cases, a little too real. I mean, Your lizard animal brains interpret these people's faces with the appropriate emotions. I mean, you're sitting there looking at a woman and you're trying to decide if she's actually distraught about the death of her husband or not. And it's real, it's really, it's intense trying to figure out, what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
And because you have that animation system going, you have a real sense that you can actually do that, versus sort of a programmatic response where you're kind of like, I don't know what, they'd have to give you some other cues. So do you think that if this were to become cheap enough and easy enough to do, that it was in everything, every human you saw in a game had realistic animations like this? Do you think that's a hindrance, or do you think that's a help to telling story through games, or just games in general? Or do you think it's a waste of money and maybe developers should look somewhere else for something?
I mean, I think that's a huge question. The first thing I think about is that voice acting has become more ever-present in all types of games. I mean, whereas before it was more sort of limited to
Nolan just, North.
Yeah, well, Nolan North, but like I'm thinking more to the genre of games, like RPGs definitely, like Mass Effect and games earlier in the RPG genre, they have a lot of, they're very dialogue heavy, so they have, if they had a lot of voice acting, that was just, it would increase the quality of the game in a number of ways. And whereas other games, which are, like FPSs, they may have some snippets here and there, but there aren't these long sort of soliloquies or, so much dialogue content in these games. But now, more and more, the voice acting has become a very important part of the game, and more importantly, as a part of the performance of the game. And voice actors have been, getting increased recognition. For example, Portal. Even though I haven't really played Portal 2, I know so much about GLaDOS and her voice. And I can't remember, you know, the name of the woman who did the voice acting for it. But that game would have been completely different if that GLaDOS hadn't been fully voiced and it was just text on screen.
Yeah.
Now, is that, can that be comparable to the visual cues made by something like L.A. Noire, the technology and the motion scan? I don't know. I can say that one of the key things you said is if the technology becomes less expensive, I think it will over time, but you still have to pay all of those actors.
Yeah.
And you have to, as a developer, you have to make that affordable. You have to make the whole process less time consuming. As I know of it, they have, you know, cameras basically focused on a 360-degree view of the actor's face and head so that they can catch all of this stuff, and then it requires a huge amount of storage space, which will be less expensive as time goes on. But the whole thing is very time consuming. So far we know that Team Bandai, who was working on the game even before Rockstar picked it up, they've been working on it for like 7 or 8 years.
Yep.
You know,
but they've only had the motion scan technology for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So
that's I mean that helps, but you know, that's the technical aspect. But ideologically, you know, do we want to have actors basically more than just, you know, having dots on them so that they capture the general motion? Do we want to be able to recognize actors from L.A. Noire, for example, in the next Call of Duty game?
Yeah.
Or is that going to be sort of disconcerting? Or does it matter on the genre? Is it okay in an adventure game like L.A. Noire? Or would it be weird in a puzzle game, you know, or something like that?
Yeah. And that brings the additional question of, you know, when these actors are lending something other than their voice, you know, when they're lending their likeness to something, you know, if that character then turns out to, you know, be able through the interactivity of the story, you know, if the player can somehow say, not necessarily for L.A. Noire, but if the player can somehow turn them into a murderer and they murder 30 people or something like that, you know, that's a consideration for the actor and his agent, you know, mm-hmm. whether that's the kind of role that, you know, the quote-unquote role. I mean, you have to consider all the multiple possibilities of an interactive storytelling
right.
as opposed to a sort of standard script kind of situation. So it does lead to an interesting, I mean, it's a fabulous opportunity for a lot of actors because, I mean, it increases the number of acting jobs that are out there. And, you know, it might not pay as well as TV show or movie work, but it's work. And it's, I think, increasingly a very visible, you know, sort of art form. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes from that. I mean, we'll see how L.A. Noire does, and particularly how people react to it in the broader scope. I mean, if this game doesn't sell a million copies, they're not going to make another sort of atmospheric adventure gamey sort of game that takes advantage of this technology. You know, so. You know, but
the technology is there.
The technology is there, and I could see it being used for something like Mass Effect 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mass Effect is a game that has a lot of dialogue sections and things like that. You know, how do you do that in a world with aliens? Well, that's harder to do, but if it was cheap enough, I think it would be worthwhile for BioWare to look into doing it that way.
So even though this game is a novelty right now. I mean, it's a novel idea. It's a new experience, and having actors with their faces used and their likenesses used in this manner is new. So, considering that sort of newness factor, has seeing any of the? I mean, I know that you've seen some actors in the game that you or actresses that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
Has that been disconcerting at all, or how has that affected your experience?
It has because it's. Mostly because it's a novel thing in a video game, you know, actually seeing people, not in full motion video, you know, but seeing a character that actually has a likeness that you recognize mm-hmm. is weird, because you don't expect that sort of fidelity in a video game. You know, will it continue to be disconcerting? Probably not. I mean, it's these people's job to play characters.
Yeah.
And you see them in a variety of different roles, and, you know, you'll always remember the first place you saw them, but later on you just see them as a character. At least hopefully you do. If all you see is the same character they've always played, then they're not doing their job as an actor.
I think still there will be the desire by companies, and rightfully so, to cast big names in these kind of roles. And yet, in a movie, when someone is large, like if you cast Bruce Willis, for example, in a movie, Bruce Willis is larger than life. When you go to a Bruce Willis movie, you know you're seeing Bruce Willis as himself playing another character, you know, with a different name or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you cast Bruce Willis in a video game, I'm not sure how... I mean, it's not as though that would be the first time. There's been stuff like, you know, Stranglehold or, you know, Dark Athena with Vin Diesel and those kind of things that have had characters. But if you're using also their likeness in such a way that that L.A. Noire is doing it, I wonder, does that disrupt the experience in more ways than would a movie?
I think it probably would for somebody like Bruce Willis, but I think that you'd only get Bruce Willis to star in a video game if it was a Bruce Willis-ass video game.
Yeah.
You know, if it was like, oh yeah, I know what to expect from this video game because Bruce Willis is in it. Stars like that bring their own baggage with them in terms of their reputation, and that's why it's so hard for actors like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Willis to break out of that. I mean, Willis has succeeded in breaking out and doing comedy and romance and things like that. You know, Schwarzenegger never has. Well, that's not true. He's done comedies.
Ish.
Yeah, ish. Anyway, so it just, that's a big star gets a reputation for a certain kind of movie, and you're never going to be able to change that perception of them in the larger mass market. But, you know, at the same time, video games are an opportunity for those guys to reach an audience that they might not otherwise.
Yeah.
So it's a good opportunity for them in that way.
It is good, and it's a different market for actors, definitely.
Yeah. Something else I was thinking about is the guy... Your character in L.A. Noire is a guy named Cole Phelps. That's the character's name. And he is played by an actor who plays a part in Mad Men. He's a known guy and stuff. And it occurred to me that is an interesting choice from the developer's perspective, because in something like Mass Effect, your character is voiced by a certain guy and is, you know, the default has a certain look. But you can change the look of the character, and there's both male and female versions. You lose as a player a certain sense of your character as yourself in this game. You know, you end up being detached from it because of that to a certain extent. I mean, you're still interested in seeing how the story plays out, but the fact is that it doesn't feel like your story. And that's
true Rockstar fashion. I mean,
it's true.
They want you to empathize with characters like John Marston or like Nico Bellic. You know, I mean,
it's just an interesting choice, and thus because of that they can get away with casting this known guy because they're telling a story.
Yeah,
you are just along for the ride versus necessarily having a sense of agency. L.A. Noire more than most, because there is one way to do it. I mean, there's no way to suddenly have somebody else be the murderer. It's always the same person.
I mean, it's not with the technology, but I hear that maybe you can say better about how you go about your cases and stuff. I mean, there's less of a sense that you can actually fail a case or something.
You can't fail a case. It is, I mean, short of dying. Literally, there is one. There is the truth of what happened, and you can do a better or worse job of uncovering it. You know, maybe if you do a better job, you implicate the suspect's partner, whereas if you do a bad job, they get away scot-free. Mm. But there's always going to be a resolution, and there's, you know, like the very first place I went into where I was sort of on my own after the tutorial, I walked into a room and there was a matchbook case from a cafe. And I was like, oh, you know, this might be an important piece of evidence. Like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go to the cafe. I go into the next room. There's another matchbook with the same cafe on it. It's like, okay, if you didn't get this the first time, then I go into the bedroom. There's another matchbook. It's like, okay, I kind of get what you're doing here. So it's that one's maybe a little more blunt than they're, for the most part, they're more subtle about it than that. But it is interesting. I mean, I think there's a surprising amount of replayability for the game. Because you can make different choices in terms of how you approach questioning people, and it is not easy to make to pick the quote unquote correct answer. So there's no way to go back. There's no quick save. You can't save and then go back and try something else. So once you make that wrong bad decision, you have to try and, you know, recover from it and or figure out another way to get the information, which is very you know, sort of real life feeling. So it's kind of cool in that regard.
I mean, is it? Some people have compared it in terms of gameplay, but in terms of the decision making to something like Heavy Rain. Does it have that sort of feel to it?
It's very much not like Heavy Rain in that Heavy Rain, you'd make a decision and things would change seriously. Mm-hmm. There's none of that in this game. You know, the only thing that would change is incidental things like whether the suspect got away. You know, I suspect at the end, I mean, I don't even think, I think I've seen bits and pieces of the main storyline, but I'm not even really close to that yet. Mm. So it'll be real interesting to see where it goes in the end, but I know it's going to one place, whereas Heavy Rain had, what, 27 different
endings?
Yeah,
I mean, you could do a number of things.
So yeah, it's not like Heavy Rain in that regard.
Okay. So going back to the motion scan technology, something you made me think of was when you're talking about, you know, the likeness of one's own likeness in a game like Mass Effect, that would be a very interesting thing if motion scan technology gets to the point where you could scan your own face and it would create different expressions based on the expressions that you give it, or based on, you know, your own facial structure, and you know, it makes you smile or it makes you frown or whatever, and then it basically scans your face onto the character, like a lot of games do, but in a way that is as realistic as L.A. Noire. That would be creepy.
That would be super creepy, and that's that kind of thing. I mean, importing your face into games exists, you know, for like
sure,
sports
yeah.
games,
but not in any
the,
sort of real
yeah
fashion.
The anime, and even for these guys, I mean, it's not like these people sat in front of cameras and did every emotion, and then the game sort of put it all together. They are given a script and they read the lines and they do their readings. You know, so it's not like the game is procedurally generating their emotions.
Yeah.
It's just it's
but,
an actual
but you would think it might be able to at some point.
I'm certain someone is working on something similar to that. You know, I don't think it's possible next year, but maybe 5 or 10 years from now that
yeah.
might be possible. But that's real VR shit. You know,
yeah,
that's Avatar in a virtual world kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure somebody's working on it. Could be really interesting, but you know.
Yeah, what do you think about the... something I was thinking about Uncanny Valley was that, you know, traditionally I think the Uncanny Valley comes in when you're trying to create images or motion or sort of CGI that is nearing the likeness of what, you know, real-life people look like.
Yeah.
Do you think that the use of actual actors and motion scanning actually helps to overcome that? That Uncanny Valley?
I certainly think it does. You know, because the motions, I mean, the 100 and whatever muscles we have in our face that work in concert to express a certain, you know, emotion to those around us, it's something that is not understood by researchers, but we all understand it implicitly in our animal lizard brains. So having a real human and being able to translate that performance into a digital, you know, thing will help, you know, ameliorate that Uncanny Valley effect. You know, the biggest problem that you have with the Uncanny Valley in these performances is that it isn't an actual filmed whole performance. You know, their body is still digital, and you still see that, and it's sort of odd.
Mm.
You know, there's still something that's off, but this is the least off, you know, human performance that you'll ever see, because it's just remarkable how good the technology is. So yeah, it's as close as anybody's come, I think, to taking down the Uncanny Valley effect.
Yeah.
And it's easy for me, at least, as an experienced video gamer, to sort of detach that unease about the Uncanny Valley and just take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be really interested to see what somebody who isn't a video game player, who isn't familiar with this, to see what their reaction to these things would be.
Mm.
And see if they, you know, had any kind of weird sense about it, other than, you know... Because it really does. You know, somebody... Ryan Davis from Giant Bomb was saying that the first time he saw it in motion and working, he thought he was watching full motion video from like the 80s, like an FMV game.
Oh, wow.
Because it just looks that good. And it does.
Huh. Well, that's pretty cool.
It is. It's very cool.
So, I mean, bottom line, it works well. I mean,
it works very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to. I mean, the whole game hangs on this technology.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what they thought the game was going to be before they had this. But upon getting this technology, they made the right decision to change it into what it is now, and made it a very interesting, unique game. I expect we'll be hearing a lot more about it as the months go on.
Great.
And there's so much opportunity for DLC. I mean, I would pay. I haven't even finished the game yet, but I would pay 50 more bucks for DLC for this game, just because it's so subdivided into cases that you can just go do.
Yeah, I mean, one would hope that they would be substantial too. I mean, I think some of the DLC that they've done with games that have been done sort of episodic. I'm thinking of like Alan Wake or even Assassin's Creed 2. They were, from what I understand, they weren't that great. You know, I mean, they didn't fit within the larger scheme of the game. You know, they felt like DLC. I mean, I think they...
Yeah, and I mean, you can look at, you know, particularly like Red Dead, you know, to stick with Rockstar. Red Dead's DLC was interesting but not critical, and then it got a little silly at the end with the Undead Nightmare Pack, which was actually supposed to be pretty good, but just, you know... but the GTA 4 DLC, people love. I mean, people love those, what those... And largely because it's different stories set in the same world.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing different main characters. And so they really bring their storytelling to it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I agree with that. And obviously people loved those games, the DLC. But, like, I played through GTA 4, like, throughout the whole thing. And I was pretty done with that game after I finished it. You know, and I thought, I'm of two minds of it. I mean, like, one, if they came out with more stuff with Niko Bellic, the main character, I would have been like... Yeah, that's cool, but they've already wrapped up the main storyline. I don't really care. And then if they come up with different characters like they did, I'm like, well, I have no attachment to these characters anyway.
Yeah, but it's an interesting story. So
yeah,
you know,
that's fair.
With mechanics you're already familiar with. So
that's fair. Yeah,
that's cool.
Great.
Anyway, are we done talking about L.A. Noire?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be real. I'm really interested for you to play it because it's. I mean, I haven't finished it. I'm interested for me to finish it and then you to play it because it's pretty stunning just in terms of concept and execution.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see if the story can hold up.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm very interested to play it. I mean, just like I wrote about this on the blog, that just like Red Dead, I wasn't into Westerns at all before I played Red Dead, and then I like started watching all these movies because I was like, this is really cool.
Yeah,
and it's the same with the noir setting. I haven't ever really been into it, but
well, you will be after playing this game.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited.
Although you kill a lot more people in this game than you do in than most people do in noir movies. I've killed like 40 people.
Really,
and it's seriously just like kind of ridiculous at this point.
Well, noir, I mean, is basically just. Very much about intrigue and like there's one or two.
Yeah, exactly. There's usually a gunfight or two.
Yeah.
And it's not even like a sustained gunfight. It's like a gunshot. And then it's like, all right, who fired the shot?
Yeah.
And you know, you figure out the mystery and all that stuff. So anyway, it's interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Anything else for this week?
I don't think so. What do we got coming up this next week? We got Dirt 3, which neither of us care about, I don't think.
Yeah, Dirt 3. And E3 in a couple of weeks. Well, there should be some news coming out.
There will
this
be some news about E3, so and stuff will start to leak and what have you.
Yeah.
PSN
is coming back up.
PSN's back up mostly, and so yay.
Speaking of announcements, did you see the Guild Wars 2 reveal of the Engineer class?
I didn't. I didn't watch that video because I was like, I'm either going to play this game when it comes out or I'm not. It's, you know, more preview videos.
Yeah.
There is such a thing as oversaturating your fan base with this stuff.
And, yeah, I mean, it's at this point, I mean, with so many different of the big publishers, it's almost unavoidable. They're just like churning out stuff.
You've been in a frothing rage about this game, you know, in a good way. For like a year and a half.
Oh my god, yes.
So at some point you have to stop frothing and be like, I can't froth anymore.
I just gotta wait for the game.
or you know, just be like, I can't froth anymore and thus I'm losing my interest.
Well, so. Dude, just watch these engineers. I mean, they're freaking awesome. I mean, when they came out with the assassin videos and I was like, that's awesome. And then they came out with these engineer videos and they're... I haven't seen something like what they're doing in the way that they're portraying it in an MMO before, and it's really, really cool.
All right, I'll go seek it out.
So,
but yeah, I mean, we don't even have a release date for that game yet.
No,
so.
I mean, they just came out with a report that there may be an open beta this year, and looking towards an early 2012 release. So.
I'm late 2012. There's no way.
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't. Yeah, you know, MMOs. It's hard to keep track.
It is hard to keep track. So yeah, remember, we're on iTunes, so check us out and rate us highly.
Rate us.
Leave us a good review, please.
Yes. Or give us constructive criticism and then rate us highly.
Send us an email with your questions at strgamerpodcast@gmail.com.
And go to the blog at strgamer.blogspot.com.
And if they want to tweet at you, what should they do?
At BrianWP.
And I'm at Sominator.
Great. I think that'll just about do it. Boy, social media makes it real complicated signing off things like this. It's like, there's 6 billion ways to get in touch with us.
We should just give a link to all the links of everything
The
world.
There's actually a social media site that collects all of that stuff together for you. And
it's called Google.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that'll do it for this week. I'm Brian signing off, and you're Sam signing off.
See you later. See you next week.
No stop.